There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
How have I gone and done this again? I'm now in trouble with another governor. So Governor Bentley, in the first term, I was cut off by his press secretary in his first term. And now we're... Now I cannot get anybody... Governor Ivey's office, they don't want to talk to me. This, how do I do this? I'm a nice guy. I've done it again. All right. More to get into here in this hour, plus 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig coming up. And my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins is checking in right now. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going today?
Well, other than obviously getting on the wrong side of the executive branch, I'm all right. I do want to talk about something that we've talked about a few times in the past. When people walk in Mobile Bay Coins and find jewelry, and you see that spot price there for what gold and silver is on spot price, that's just the beginning of a question that could lead to an education in precious metals.
Well, it really is, and I was smiling when I was listening to your comments about the governor's office. We're sort of the exact opposite of that, in that we want you to ask questions. We want you to understand what you're getting into. We're not going to try to pull, you know, this is not smoke and mirrors. We want you to understand the precious metals markets. We want you to understand collectible coins and why the coin that you saw on Google isn't quite the same one that you thought you had in your pocket. We'll help you understand all of that.
Okay, and there's, you've taught me over time that you got the precious metal part of it, just the raw value of these precious metals, but then you can, then it gets more complicated. Then we go to the 201 level. What if I get a silver round? Now I have something that has silver value, but also has what, collectible and artistic value.
And that's part of what you've got to look at some of these things. When you look at these Queen's Beast series, for example, the second coin in that set, we were selling those for $40, $45 a piece when they first came out. Now they're selling for about $100 a piece. So that's a heck of a jump. And at the same time, the silver didn't change. Still 2 ounces of silver, and the silver price is still about the same. So sometimes you're gambling on the numismatic side of things. Sometimes
the metal prices, but we
can help you out with all of that.
You throw those big words around. Numis what?
Coin nerd.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to be a coin nerd, just give us a shout, and we'll help you, help steer you down that weird path.
All right. People want to come in and get that education and check out the huge selection of, obviously, precious metals, jewelry, open-L knives, all kind of cool collectible stuff. How do they find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can check us out on Facebook and see some of the cool pictures there. Or listen to us on this station, for goodness sakes.
There you go. Tuesday nights, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
You have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Let me throw one more story on top of this. So we got in the fire. It's rolling now, starting to roll. It's gotten some of the lighter knots, gone ahead and gotten the hardwood to start rolling on this fire. And I'm going to put another log on here, too. I let this go for a little bit. Story from our buddy Jeff Poor over at Yellowhammer News says, Doug Jones, $125 million infra grant for Mobile Bay Bridge is a first step. A $90 a month toll is just not feasible. So not only have the Republicans, the new ones into the mix on the toll, like Tuberville and Roy Moore, not only are they talking about how bad the toll is now, along with the ones that were already there, now the, some would argue, the caretaker senator, junior senator from Alabama, is saying, hey, this is not going to work. So Doug Jones, and he's going to be on the show with us, I think, a week from today. Senator Jones will be on with us. He's always interesting to talk to, and we'll ask him about the ice cream sandwich. Jeff writes this, for many of the critics of the proposed $2.1 billion new Mobile Bay Bridge for Interstate 10, and Dalton, can we write this down as we make a note? I bet you, okay, today is, 27th? 26th of July. By Labor Day, they'll have bumped that 2.1 number up. We'll start talking about 2.3. It'll be $2.3 billion by Labor Day. Okay. All right, so Jeff says, for many of the critics of the proposed $2.1 billion new Mobile Bay Bridge project for I-10, the federal component of the funding has been underwhelming. Well put, Jeff. Even as the feds have pledged $125 million through a Infrastructure for Rebuilding America grant, which is IMFRA, like we always talk about. That's the acronym. During a conference call with reporters on Thursday, U.S. Senator Doug Jones called the grant a first step and said he was working to secure more funding for the project. I'm telling you right now, if Doug Jones gets funding for the bridge and Richard Shelby, the head of appropriations, doesn't. Oh, don't worry. That his office doesn't talk to me either. No, not Doug Jones, but Senator Shelby's. That'll be a story. So Doug Jones said to Yellowhammer News, I'm hoping the grant will come through. I know that we have in the past tried to support whatever grants Mobile and the area have tried to reach. There are some things that are there now that, of course, is welcome news that they can get, but I think it's a first step. Now, the junior senator acknowledged there were problems with the proposed tolling from the Alabama Department of Transportation, but suggested that if the project were to be designed as an evacuation route, it could make additional federal money available. If we got to put a sign on it that says evacuation route, then get the dang sign up, because it is an evacuation route. I-10 is an evacuation route. I mean, come on. Back to the story here. Senator Jones says, I agree that a $90 a month toll is just not feasible. That's just out of the question for folks who are doing, who are going to do that, and we got to look at other ways. I want to go back to the thing we got in our SAFE Act, which is another acronym, which will help infrastructure and create additional pots of money. Ah, the magical pots of money, if we can get that passed. It's called the Be Safe Act, and while it is designed specifically for evacuation routes, clearly that I-10 can be an evacuation route, end quote. And make a note to talk to Senator about this. It's not, it can be, it is. I-10 is an evacuation route. He goes on to say, we just got to be thinking of the right ways we can get more federal dollars into that project and reduce the cost, because I've said all along, not every state can handle public-private partnerships the way others can. And I have consistently said that there's going to be any toll, it's got to be something people can live with and not be an extraordinary tax. We have tried to write letters for the grants. I have been very supportive of the DOT grant that Mobile has tried to do. So hopefully it's going to work out. We just keep coming, trying to find ways every way we can to try to help them, end quote. Now, I will point out that this is, you know, the senator saying this in election year, right? Going into the election year. So, it makes sense. If this was the other side of the senatorial cycle and it was Senator Shelby, maybe he would, after getting done driving all 67 counties, remember that ad he ran last time? After driving all 67 counties of Alabama, he'd be saying these same things. Maybe, but I get the nuanced reason why Doug Jones may be saying this stuff and it's been fairly quiet from Shelby's office, other than, oh, here's the $125 million. But is it a sad statement that it's Doug Jones that's doing the interviewing and talking about this and how he's going to work for getting money for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, and it's not the head of appropriations of the party in charge of the Senate? I'm just saying. All right. 114, coming right back. We will have 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig. This is all the stuff that I missed on the web this week. Quite often this has stories that are based in Florida, Washington State, Oregon comes in once in a while. But before, it's pretty high density of Florida man stories, but also just news of the weird things you had not heard yet. These things all come up every Friday. 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig, and we'll do that next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. By the way, once again, thank you, all of y'all and your great voting. And FM Talk 106.5 winning again in the Nappies, best morning show. Wouldn't happen without y'all. thank you. It means a lot to us. Seriously does. That's not lip service stuff. It's a big deal. Y'all take time because the stopping down, going to a website, voting for things. I know that's like if I'm in your shoes, I probably don't do it.
Take some effort.
I could love a show and I probably wouldn't follow through, do it. And so y'all did. And that's like crazy awesome. Like, thank you. So thank you. We do appreciate that. That's not just thank you very much. Thank you, buddy, it's real.
Four years in a row now. Not bad.
Favorite morning show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, and it's time for 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig. If y'all are new to the party, Dalton, what is this?
Well, 6.5 Stories is that time every week where we kind of try to wrap the weekend or wrap the week up here on Midday Mobile with some of the craziest...
A big wacky bow.
Stupidest, any adjective you want to throw in there, stories of the week. And it's stuff that usually we're unable to get to during Mobile Mornings or Midday Mobile, but really, I'm scraping the bottom of the internet to find some of this stuff. I know you mentioned Florida man, Florida woman. No Florida man or woman
what?
In this week's stories. We do have someone from Oregon coming up.
Good.
In just a
little bit. Was right on Oregon, right? Is going to be the new Florida. If y'all looking what's trending, Florida man is really... Now, you and I have been talking about Florida man 5 years or so on the show, way before everybody else thought it was cool. I'm going to kind of move my attention to Oregon, man.
Yeah. That Pacific Northwest, things get hairy up there. Yeah, so a lot of crazy things happen. So we'll get to Oregon here in a little bit. But first, we open up with what are the hipsters going to come up with next, Sean?
That's the question that's on my mind every night as I go to sleep. What are the hipsters do next?
What are they working on? And I guess sometime over the last decade, I can't pinpoint the exact time, but Pabst Blue Ribbon, PBR, that became the official beer for all those man bun wearers out there, which is a shame because I thought of it as kind of a blue collar.
Yeah. Why they did it, because it gave them some more like dirt road cred or something.
I guess so, but they just find a clean jar that they could buy somewhere and fill it up with PBR, and all of a sudden the hipsters think they're a hardworking blue collar American.
Right.
But now PBR, they've taken that mantle and they've gone and they've done it again, Sean. Here's the headline. PBR launches hard coffee made with creamy American milk. Pabst, putting coffee in the beer. It says PBR testing out...
Putting beer in coffee or coffee in beer?
Coffee in beer. Well, actually, if you listen to it, it might be a little bit more coffee than beer. They're trying this out in some select states, they say. Now, PBR's beer coffee made from, quote, Arabica and Robusta coffee beans and, quote, rich, creamy American milk. They're hyping it, saying it tastes like premium vanilla-infused iced coffee, but it packs a 5% ABV bunch, so alcohol by volume.
Yeah,
5%, which is pretty standard for beer. John Newhouse is the brand manager at PBR. He said, Pabst Blue Ribbon has always been a brand that pushes boundaries.
Sure,
and celebrates those who...
Sure it is.
They weren't pushing boundaries for a good two decades there. It's
PBR. He rolled out and said, PBR pushes boundaries? Yeah, y'all are on the edge of stuff.
On the cutting edge. Hard coffee is an opportunity for us to pioneer a delicious and fun new drink and give America something unique. We hope everyone loves it as much as we do. Unfortunately, if you're a hipster here in Alabama, you'll have to travel to Florida if you want to pick up some of the hard coffee. They've got it available in Florida, Pennsylvania, Maine, New Jersey, and Georgia. And if you're wondering how much this will set you back, prices vary by state, but a four-pack of the hard coffee in Pennsylvania selling, once again, a four-pack for $14.99.
A couple things going on there. First of all, Pennsylvania is a totalitarian state when it comes to alcohol. It's almost as bad as the state of Alabama. It's worse.
Mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania is worse. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
It's all those
Keystone
Quakers.
State. It's bad. It's really bad in Pennsylvania. So that doesn't surprise me. But can I, not to reinforce ethnic stereotypes here.
But you will.
But let me... that's Irish coffee.
Mm-hmm. Well, Irish coffee has
whiskey. But, they're putting alcohol. It's just kind of like a derivation.
Mm-hmm.
Welsh coffee.
Yeah.
It's North Irish coffee.
Except this is, with PBR.
Okay, I'm just pointing out this. I know, alcohol and coffee. I didn't know, being around one side of my family, I didn't know coffee came in the other way.
No. I thought that you had to pour the alcohol in first or you weren't drinking coffee. That's I'm right there with you, except I would take the Irish whiskey over the PBR any day with my coffee. And, even if there is coffee in this PBR beer, not sure that if you drink enough, I think you'll still make some bad decisions, even with the coffee in the PBR beer. This woman in the next story, she was drinking something a little bit stronger than that PBR hard coffee, and it resulted in maybe the easiest DUI arrest ever. So this happened last weekend, An intoxicated Oregon motorist was nabbed after she allegedly poured liquor down the mouth of a Taco Bell employee while she was waiting in the drive-thru. She pulls up to the Taco Bell window to, I'm guessing, get her order, whatever she ordered back at the booth.
Chalupas.
Chalupas, probably. Maybe a burrito or two. And while there at the window, she got the Taco Bell employee to stick their head outside of window one and poured some liquor into this employee's mouth.
Go!
According to police, Eliana Aguilar has the rare double name.
Aguilar. Wow.
I don't know if she was married to an Aguilar and then married another Aguilar or if it's
that
a family name.
So Aguilar.
Not sure, but this is a 23-year-old woman from Cornelius, Oregon, and police say she rolled through the drive-thru of the fast food chain in Beavertown, Oregon, Monday night around 1:20 a.m., reached through the open drive-thru window and dumped the alcohol into the employee's mouth. Authorities said that Aguilar committed the act while still in her car and just happened to be right in front of a sergeant with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. Didn't even look into the rearview mirror.
Well, you don't need a rearview mirror when you're partying.
Police took the woman into custody, arrested her on a DUII, and that's not because she has two last names.
Oh, I thought it was like a naval term.
Stands for driving under the influence of intoxicants. She blew blood alcohol content of 0.12. Like so many other states.
Wait a second. So they had to qualify what you're under the influence of. So like DUI, you could just be driving under the influence of love or driving under the influence of the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. But out there is DUII, Captain.
DUII, Captain. Okay. Driving under the influence of intoxicants. Aguilar admitted to boozing and smoking the weed. Also had a bottle of Hennessy in her car.
She did. She's a gangster.
And this news outlet following up, they reported that Aguilar did not know the Taco Bell employee. But they know each other now, I'm sure.
Aguilar
getting arrested in an Oregon Taco Bell drive-thru. For our next story here, you know, Sean, I learned something new every week doing these 6.5 stories.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's an annual event held in St. Louis and around the rest of the world every summer. It's called the World Naked Bike Ride. And in this World Naked Bike Ride, you guessed it, people, well, they get naked and they ride their bikes around the city. And last Saturday in St. Louis, participants in this year's World Naked Bike Ride were attacked by a man wielding a paintball gun. And they say the terrifying...
kind of funny, as long as nobody got hurt. That's kind of...
Yeah, and no one's seriously injured, but they do have video from this event. They say the terrifying incident was caught on video because if you're in news, every incident is
a terrifying incident. And it's all breaking, and everything needs an alert.
They can't just say, dummy shows up with paintball gun and shoots naked people off their bikes.
Yes.
So they write here, the annual bike ride, which is usually a happy event that celebrates community, bike safety, and body positivity. You know, I saw some of these pictures. Not a whole lot of bodies out there to be positive about.
Just a side note, too. I've always wondered about this. And they'll have them. They've had them. I know I was down in Miami one time. They had them. I mean, Paris has a big naked bike ride. You know how small some of the bicycle seats are? I'm just saying, they're not riding on like the old the Schwinn, the long, like the banana seat. These are those little small, like when they're getting the bikes really light, the 10 speeds, these little. Okay, and I'll leave it there.
And some of these guys and gals that are on these bikes, even if they weren't naked, probably need a little bit of a bigger seat than they had. I mean, I was going through the pictures. I was stunned by some of these.
I'm going to go stun myself right now.
They said the participants are normally met with cheers and giggles from onlookers, but one man decided to use them for target practice. Here is the audio from the 21-second video. Now, in this, you'll hear the man with the paintball gun walking closer to the bike path as these naked bikers stream past. They say he appears to unload at least 9 shots on the riders. And it's not running, the audio here.
Oh, there we go. One more time. On the top. There we go. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do this.
I'm not doing anything. I'm running.
You can hear the cartridge snapping off there as he shoots the paintballs at the naked people on their bikes. World Naked Bike Ride Planning Committee volunteer, which I want to know how you volunteer for.
I like that there's a position like that.
Yeah. Andrea Hitzman is her name, and she told this local TV station, KSDK, that none of the riders were seriously injured. But just file that away next time you're thinking about riding a bike naked or traveling to St. Louis to take part in the World Naked Bike Ride, that there's likely someone around the corner with a paintball gun, just waiting to light you up.
Do you see their headline here? I saw it said Naked Bike Ride 2019, nudity with a message.
And nudity definitely encouraged. I thought that when I saw some of these pictures that it would be all pasties and short shorts. Some of them let it fly, 100%.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm so libertine. This stuff doesn't bother me. It does amuse me when they get shot with paintballs. I mean, if you want to, I do wonder though how the seat, the little like the 10 speed, like, y'all know what I'm talking about. Those little 10 speed.
And it's hot out there.
Oh, here's the pictures. All right, we'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Returning to 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig. Where are we now on the list?
Story number four here.
Number four.
Quattro.
Okay. All right, so we've made the turn.
We have made the turn, and somewhere with this next story, Jason Aldean and Kenny Chesney are smiling when they hear this.
Okay.
This story comes out of Rush City, Minnesota, where KARE11 is reporting that a 2.5-year-old decided to take his battery-powered John Deere tractor to the county fair without asking his parents. Just drove off in the...
Wait. So, county fair is going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a... my son, I don't know... Oh, I know where that thing is. He had the battery-powered John Deere tractor.
Still have it.
Yeah.
Now, I had the... What monster truck was it that I had for a while there?
Bigfoot?
Bigfoot, yeah. Wasn't Gravedigger. I had a Bigfoot. I did not have a John Deere battery-powered tractor, but this 2.5-year-old up in Minnesota.
Cool. I tried to ride it one time.
And how old were you when you tried that? Recently?
44, 43, something like that.
Well, this happened last Thursday night. Dispatchers say they received a call about a missing child at 6:51 p.m. They had him safe with a deputy just 2 or 3 minutes later after that call went out. They found him in the middle of the fairgrounds. As it turns out, this toddler lives only a block and a half or so from the fairgrounds.
Thank you for answering it, because I was expecting him. He drove 3 hours on the electric.
He paid four tolls on his way to the fair. They said that he had seen the rides going up over the previous few days while riding around in his parents' car as they were taking in, I'm sure, to and from daycare or school or wherever they were going. And then when the fair finally opened up last Thursday night, the kid was excited, so he decided to check things out for himself. Sergeant Jason Foster says that the little guy drove his tractor down the sidewalk through a back gate and then navigated a heavy crowd that was there for the motocross races happening that night. Then he finally arrived at the destination he was trying to arrive at, the Tilt-A-Whirl.
I like this kid.
That's exactly where he took his John Deere tractor. They said before he could get on the Tilt-A-Whirl, which I'm not sure if they would have allowed him up there anyway. He is 2.5 years old.
Right.
State Representative Brian Johnson, who is also a former sheriff's deputy, said he saw the boy and figured that something was amiss.
Wow, so way to go, Clouseau.
He flagged down a deputy who made sure that the tractor-driving kid was reunited with his dad. And dad took it upon himself. He wasn't going to let this go without any discipline, so he took the battery out of the John Deere tractor. The kid was found safe, but pretty cool story he'll have to tell his friends.
Here's one thing
that
protects that from happening too much is if it's the like the ones we had, unless it's the first couple months of it, the battery holds so little charge so poorly, the kid's not going to get too far before they run out of juice, before it's just going,
And if he had any hills to navigate, it wasn't going to make it up the hill.
That's
so
right.
This must have been, using our detective knowledge here, must have been a new John Deere battery-powered tractor.
At least a hot battery, brand new Peg Perego or whatever whatever it is. A new hot battery, fresh battery.
I think this kid's going places. He saw the fair going up. He said, hey, I got a ride. I'm just going to drive myself over there and figure this out, get on the Tilt-A-Whirl. Thankfully, some sheriff's deputies were there and helped him out. This next story here could have been ripped directly from the Nextdoor app, where the neighbors snitch on other neighbors and tell you that the world is coming to an end if you've ever opened up that Nextdoor app. Here's the first graph from this story from The Guardian. A dog owner from Devon, England, has asked for help to be reunited with her miniature chihuahua after a seagull took it from her garden.
Sorry, chihuahua lovers.
She lost her chihuahua when a seagull took it from her garden.
When your dog's so small, and we got small dogs now too, along with my old big dog. When your dog's small, how big is the damn seagull?
That's a good question. Becca Hill is the woman who lost her dog. She's 24 years old from Paignton, England. She says her 4-year-old yapper, Gizmo is his name, was carried away on Sunday afternoon. She told the Devon Live website, which is always on fire, she said, my partner was in the garden putting the washing out at the time, and suddenly he saw the seagull swoop down. It carried Gizmo a fair way as we could not see him anymore. I have no idea if he was dropped or where Gizmo is now. She did say her 6-year-old daughter was upset and missing the dog, but did not witness this act of violence that the seagull carried out. And just in case...
There's no way, unless we're talking about an albatross or something, there's no way. How small of a...
You think maybe some... false identification on the type of bird that might have...
I think it could have been like a falcon or, you know, it could be a hawk or something like that, but a seagull?
Well, there's still an outstanding bolo on Gizmo the Chihuahua right now, and I figure just in case... I mean, they didn't see the seagull drop Gizmo, so seagull could still be flying around with the Chihuahua, and just in case it made its way across the Atlantic, I'll go ahead and give some details on Gizmo here. Authorities say they are looking for a brown and white Chihuahua. Then they say the breed only grows to about 9 inches tall. So be on the alert, everyone. We're looking for a Chihuahua, a brown and white Chihuahua. Not a whole lot of information out there on Gizmo.
There's a certain point that, I love dog breeds and all the different breeds. I've been into purebred dogs and just dogs in general for a long time. And it's neat how we've come up with specialty dogs for all this stuff. But at a certain point with the miniaturization, I don't speak to him directly. I think I do. I offer up my thoughts. I think that makes God angry. I think some of these miniature dogs, the teacup stuff, my daughter's always showing me pictures of. I said that we have messed with that so much that God is going to, you're going to suffer for that.
He sends his seals down.
Yes.
To take Gizmos.
I don't think he likes that.
There was an update. UAV lost dog search and rescue there in town. They've urged households to check their gardens, rooftops, trees, and hedges for Gizmo. And then a spokesperson for the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, who I'm sure is conflicted with this story, she said, "This must be extremely upsetting for the dog's owner. Fortunately, these types of incidents are very rare and not typical gull behavior."
If he was a sandwich, it'd be a different story. Or a fry.
Yeah, that's right. So that brings us to story 6. And you know, this last week, the 50th anniversary of Neil Armstrong becoming the first human to step foot on the moon. So I have a couple Apollo 11 stories to close out the week. And this first one, just crazy. Former NASA intern Gary George, back in 1976, paid $217.77 for 1,150 reels of NASA magnetic tape at a government auction while he was interning at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. And just this last Saturday, on the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, George sold 3 of those NASA videotapes of the Apollo 11 moon landing for $1.82 million at the auction house Sotheby's.
He bought that. So they were having like a rummage sale there, and he bought the tapes?
I guess so, and he bought them in bulk and gave away a lot of these magnetic reels, but 3 of them were the official moon landing video from NASA. Say the tapes have a combined runtime of 2 hours and 24 minutes, and they show the entirety of the moonwalks as seen by mission control staff the first walk to the phone call with then-President Richard Nixon. This guy found them at some rummage sale, paid $217 for them, and made quite the ROI with $1.82 million. And for our final story, for 6.5 stories, we all know that Tang was a popular drink for astronauts. But here's something you might not know. When Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first humans to step foot on the moon, what food did they eat that became part of the first meal ever eaten on the moon?
They couldn't eat. They were in the spacesuit.
No, they could eat.
You couldn't get through the... how would you get the food?
Maybe they were on the lunar module when they ate, but they were sitting on the moon.
You're out there in the spacesuit, you can't put... I want to eat the food, but I can't.
Maybe they weren't foot to moon dust, but they were sitting in the module on the moon.
And so what were they eating then?
Yes. What was their first meal? The first meal ever eaten on the moon.
Biscotti.
It was something fancy.
Must be biscotti.
No, and it wasn't Spam either. Amy Shira Titel, for her blog Vintage Space, said bacon cubes were among the meals stored in the lunar module.
Thank goodness, bacon in space.
Bacon was the very first meal ever eaten in space. She said that it worked out that meal A, the first scheduled meal to be eaten on the moon, consisted of bacon squares, peaches, sugar cookie cubes, pineapple grapefruit drink, and coffee. They ate history's first meal on the moon slightly ahead of schedule after landing on the Sea of Tranquility.
See all the stuff you learn here? That is it. 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig. Thank you, man.
No problem.
All right. We'll be right back.
What gets me? She thinks my tractor's sexy. We ride back and forth till we're...
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
My buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino back in studio and talking about a subject that was big when we first started talking about it. But man, it is everywhere now, the discussion of these faulty 3M earplugs. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me here.
This is a story that affects so many people in our area. The number of veterans in our area of the Gulf Coast between Northwest Florida, Alabama, and Southeast Mississippi is of big volume. Big volume.
That's one of the beauties of this case is that I really don't have to go further than, you know, 100-mile radius or even my back door, basically, to represent clients in this litigation, because there are so many people that love our country and have served our country that are right here in our backyard. And I think it's so important to be able to meet with your lawyer, see your lawyer face-to-face. I mean, you can do things over the phone, by email, but there's things that aren't communicated like that. And so that's the beauty of having us, you know, handle these cases. And we're actually on the leadership team now in the litigation that's centered in Pensacola. So we're thick in this case, and we're able to know the things that we need to know to represent these guys and ladies. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity, really.
Yeah, it's something as a Marine that you get to help out other members of the armed forces. But also, you mentioned the Pensacola part, so people don't get confused. You explained this to us last time. National case, but they've picked to hold this trial. This is happening right here in our backyard.
So this is what's called a multi-district litigation. It's just a fancy word for when there are lawsuits, individual suits that are filed all over the country. There's a federal procedural tool that says, hey, I don't want 30 or 50 different federal judges ruling on the same case and having inconsistent rulings. So we're going to send all the individual cases to one location under one judge. Same thing happened with BP, and it got sent to New Orleans. Judge Barbier there. Chinese Drywall got sent to New Orleans. Judge Fallon there. This one got sent to, or has been sent to Pensacola, and Judge Casey Rogers is the judge there, and she's sharp as a tack, and she's going to be a great judge, we believe.
So you are on the leadership board in this?
Yes, I got appointed by Judge Rogers to the leadership team. I'm on, it sounds real fancy, it sounds like Joint Chiefs of Staff or something, and I was just a lowly enlisted Marine, but it's the Joint Armed Services Committee. So what we do is we handle any type of communications or document production between the head of the litigation, the plaintiff's side, and the government and the military. So that's sort of our role in it, is to be a liaison. And you know, and I like being an enlisted Marine dealing with all these officers and big wigs. And I said, how do you like dealing with a lowly enlisted guy?
You know, it's you mentioned the national scope of this, but what's important for people to understand, because I hear there, all this noise coming at them, information coming at them about this. The point is, you're taking cases, Ed. You're taking individual cases. This is not, like you mentioned, it's like BP. It's a big, big story, a lot of damages, a lot of people, but individuals are coming to you. It's not as a group. Like, that person comes to you, and you're their attorney.
Yeah, I want to get that word out, because I'm hearing this on a consistent basis. Almost everyone I meet with says that, yeah, I've seen those ads or and heard some radio spots, and it sounds like one of those mini class actions where the person at the end of the day, 5 years down the road, gets like $50, and it's really not even worth their while to even get involved in it. And so this is not a class action. I explained that to them. I explained what it is. It's a multi-district litigation. Everybody has their own individual case, and it's going to be much more substantial than what you would see from a class action, where, like, let's say a cellular phone company charges $2 a month on somebody's bill, on everybody's bill in the nation, make a bunch of money on it, and you have damages of $30 or something like that. It's not going to be worth most people's time to even really bother with that, and I throw those things away and ignore those ads on TV as well. But this is much different, and plus it's got a moral and ethical side about making sure that a company that wants to profit by selling the military certain goods, a safety product, and making sure that that company knows that if they're going to manufacture a safety product, it's got to work, and it cannot put our troops in harm's way. And these earplugs, we have the documentation. It's out there. You can find it online right now. 3M knew that the earplugs didn't work. They were essentially worthless, and they sold these things to the government, didn't tell the government about this to such an extent that it was deceitful that the government had a criminal investigation against 3M and also sued 3M for fraud. That's how all this came out, is when the government sued 3M for fraud, and 3M agreed to pay $9.1 million for defrauding the government. That's when this all came out. But, you know, folks like us, like myself, said, hey, well, what about the boots on the ground? What about the Marines and the guys in the Army, all the branches that wore these, you know, the individual soldiers and troops that were handed these earplugs?
Issued them. Issued them. This is what they had to wear.
Yes, they were issued them by, you know, by the government. You know, so it's almost as if 3M, you know, put them in their hands and said, wear these earplugs, and then, you know, looked away and winked and said, you know, guess what? The earplugs don't work, and we don't care. And there were plenty of other earplugs out there that worked. I mean, just the plain old no-frills earplug that you squish up and stick in your ear, well, that sucker provides over 30 decibels of noise reduction. These 3M earplugs, the yellow side, their own tests show they provided zero noise reduction. The green side, which was the better side, only provided 10.9 decibels of noise reduction versus the old school plain Jane ones you stick in your ear and you get 30, 35 decibels of noise reduction. So the troops that I talk to and I tell them these things, they are shaking their head in disgust because they know the conditions that they have, that they can't hear. They have constant ringing in their ear. It drives them crazy. And this company knowingly sold bad earplugs that caused that. Now, how do we know that? Okay, so I'm a lawyer. You got to prove certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've heard other lawyers handling these cases that say, hey, we only want vets that joined after the earplugs were first issued, because no telling what they went through noise-wise before the earplugs were issued. So I've got a much different opinion about that. And what I'm seeing is the guys and the ladies that were in for 10, 15 years before these earplugs were issued, you know, they're doing rifle range yearly qualification. I even have, you know, one Marine that was in 6 combat missions before these earplugs were issued. And his hearing after 6 combat missions wearing plain old Jane earplugs was fine. I've got the audiograms to show that. But then for some strange reason, and I'm being facetious here, when the earplugs were issued back in 2002 and 3, his hearing, per the audiogram test, just went to junk, basically, you know. And there's no coincidence there. And that's not just one person I'm seeing this with. You know, if I have a client that has been in the military for 10, 15, whatever years before the earplugs were issued, I'm taking a strong note of that, and I'm eagerly looking and analyzing their audiograms, and I'm finding a definite huge trend that their hearing was fine when they were wearing their old school earplugs, but when these fancy earplugs by 3M got put in their hands and that's what they had to wear, well, their hearing was destroyed or damaged.
I can hear it. Everybody can hear it in your voice. I've known you a long time. You're a passionate advocate for all your clients, but when it comes to members of the military, there's an extra part of this to it.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 21 years, practicing law, and it can be a stressful practice. And, you know, my wife asked me every day, just like a lot of wives ask, and I ask her as well, how was your day? And, you know, since I've been doing this, I get to meet with several vets every day, and offer my services, offer my help to them. And I look at their records, and not a single one of them brag about any of their records of what they did. I mean, I'm talking about Purple Hearts, and Silver Stars and all sorts of things for acts of bravery that they've done. And I get to go home knowing that I'm representing people that literally put their blood on the battlefield, put their lives on line, save the lives of other people. And yeah, I get fired up about that.
And that's why you've got to have somebody who takes your individual case, your individual situation, and understands it. So somebody listening to us right now that fits the parameters of this time frame, that has been serving our military, had those earplugs, or even somebody who knows somebody, a loved one, how do they get in touch? How do they get you to meet with that member of the military and find out more about their situation?
You know, to get in touch with me at my law firm here in Mobile, all you do is Google Taylor Martino Law Firm, Mobile, Alabama, and you'll find our information.
All right, Ed, thank you.
Thank you.
Ed Round with Taylor Martino, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.